This is the Awful Announcing Podcast.
Three-pointer.
Oh, Huggins! Double honor!
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow! In your life have you seen anything like that?
Oh!
LeBron James with no regard for human life!
Welcome to the AA Podcast.
Maddie. What are you still doing here?
Here's Matt Yoder.
Welcome, everyone. This is the Awful Announcing Podcast. I am Matt Yoder, and we're going to jump straight into our discussion this week. We're pleased to welcome into this week's podcast to recap World Cup qualifying, much more, ESPN's lead soccer analyst, former MLS MVP, Taylor Twellman. Taylor, thanks for taking the time out of your busy day doing laundry to join us.
No problem, brother. Speaking of that laundry, I'm folding my underwear as we speak, so bear with me here.
We had Dirk Hayhurst from TBS, who was lying in his bed in his underwear last week on the podcast, so I'm sensing a theme now that's developing.
Too much information.
Yeah, a little bit. Let's start with the wrapping up of World Cup qualifying and the incredible events this week. The USA saving Mexico's World Cup hopes by defeating Panama on the road. Do you think, Taylor, honestly, was there any thought at all of giving that game away to Panama Tuesday night at any point throughout the last week and the 48 hours leading up to that game, during the game? Any thought process whatsoever going through the minds of the players, the coaches, the staff of letting Panama having that game to kick Mexico out of the World Cup?
Zero. Not even a slight of chance. Now, it was more throughout the minds of us, the American soccer fan, and you know, being the number one rival of Mexico and all that sort. But I can guarantee you one thing, and to be honest with you, Matt, that's the credit to the players, your good Klinsmann and the staff. It's about integrity of the sport and playing the game through, and you saw it with Graham Zuzzi's, you know, goal, and then Aaron Johansson's goal, and Brad Davis, you know, playing a huge part in both goals. The players didn't quit. They weren't going to quit, and I don't think it would ever cross their mind. Now, obviously, as we've heard from, you know, Graham Zuzzi's of the world, that right when the game was over, then they realized what they had done and what, you know, obviously they want, I think, three trips to Mexico, whatever they want. But it's just, I've never seen it. I've never seen it in my lifetime, Matt, where if I would have told you last August, before the U.S.-Mexico friendly at Azteca Stadium, that, you know, while Mexico's celebrating a gold medal from the Olympics, that they would need a game-time goal in extra time from Graham Zuzzi in the United States in order to make a World Cup playoff against New Zealand, you would have questioned my credibility. You would have started laughing at me. And the harsh reality is, that's exactly what went on. They're in a World Cup playoff against New Zealand, Mexico. It's crazy.
So the question is, how did they get there? I mean, how do you explain this precipitous free fall? They're now reportedly going to their fourth coach in a month. And maybe, I mean, some people might look at this playoff against New Zealand and think, you know, this isn't a cupcake for Mexico. They could actually lose this.
Well, you bring up an interesting point, because the first game in Azteca in Mexico will be interesting, because we all know what New Zealand's going to do. They're going to come in and put 11 guys inside the 18 about to try to leave 0-0. Now, the longer that game goes 0-0, what is that crowd going to do? Well, you know, the Olays are going to come through. No Chicharito, which may be a blessing in disguise, considering, you know, he's in awful form right now. But it's amazing. I don't know. I don't question the talent at all whatsoever on Mexico, the individual talent they have. Maybe they read their press clippings too much. As a former athlete, I will never question the heart of players. But I will say this. They don't look like they're on the same page. And I think they felt that it was going to be a lot easier than it was, obviously. And I think that's also credit to what Honduras has turned out to be as a soccer nation, because, in part because of what MLS has done to help their national team grow a lot, those players coming through MLS and then moving on to the EPL. And I think that's credit to Honduras and Panama competing. It's just hysterical to me to think Mexico has to go through New Zealand into a playoff. Now, Matt, here's the funny part, right? What happens in Brazil next year when they go to the quarterfinals and the United States doesn't? I mean, that's at all possible. If they qualify, none of this really matters.
Exactly.
They're in the big tournament. We'll see what happens in the draw. But that's the funny thing about this sport, is you really just have to get to Brazil and then everything can happen.
And you talk about the turnaround with Mexico and what's possible next summer. I mean, look what's happened with Jurgen Klinsmann and the United States team. It wasn't that long ago there was talk about this experiment being a failure. There was talk about players revolting and anonymous sources coming out. And yet now, looking at the big picture, the USA goes 7-1-2 in the hex. They get first place. Big winning streak this summer. Gold Cup triumph. I mean, that situation has turned around, maybe not as dramatically as what we've seen in Mexico, but it's certainly, I think, a long way away. You would have to be quite the optimist to think that this year has gone as good for it has as the United States men's national team if I would tell you all of these dominoes would fall into place last year, the year before.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty good summary of what went on, because I don't know in the previous 10 years if we ever saw, after the first game of the final round of hexagonal, an article come out the way it did for Jurgen Klinsmann and the anonymous sources and the questioning about the German-Americans, Mexican-Americans, you know, the locker room and all that. Man, I don't remember that, and I honestly don't think that ever happened. Obviously, there's been some turmoil under Bruce Arenas and the Steve Sansons of the world and Bob Bradley's fine, but not to that extent. But I asked Jurgen Klinsmann in before the game against Jamaica, and I said, you know, what have you learned? And the first thing he said was, that Honduras game was a huge learning experience for me personally and for us as a team. And he felt that he learned a lot about what it takes to win in CONCACAF and qualify in CONCACAF because of that game. And he actually said something interesting. He said he's very grateful of that experience because he's not sure he would have learned if they went down there, you know, with a bunch of the European players struggling in the heat, maybe got a result. Maybe they don't figure it out this summer. But the most impressive thing about what their run is how they handled games at home. And I said it before the final round of qualifying, and I'll always stick to it. If you win your home games, it doesn't really matter. You have 5 home games, win those, you're pretty much in good shape. They did very well at home, Matt.
Mm-hmm. What has been the biggest key to this revival under Klinsmann? Is it the style of play that we're seeing? Is it the different players coming together, more cohesion? Is it some of these players that have come in now under the new tenure? What do you see as the biggest defining key to success that has been systematic as we've seen the U.S. get on this roll over the past year?
I would say, you know, it's not a revolution, it's evolution. You know, I think you and I would be remiss not to talk about, you know, Bob Bradley and Bruce Arena all started this part of the process, but anytime you get a World Cup winning coach come into the equation, where that equation may have been a little stale, and I give Jurgen Klinsmann a ton of credit on this. How many coaches would play a center back at Azteca Stadium for a second cap, Matt Beasley? How many guys would say to Aaron O'Hampton, you're going to play, Graham Tuesday, you're going to play, Mitch Fitzgerald, you're going to play? He, Alejandro Bedoya, in Columbus versus Mexico, he's been very confident in giving his players an opportunity to seize the moment. I think that comes from him playing at the highest level and being an ex-player that looked for opportunities like that. That's what's been more impressive to me than coming out saying, well, he's got the formation different, all that. I don't think he has, because I think he's won games very similarly to the way Bob Bradley used to win games, Bruce Arena. But he's opened the door for some new faces, young faces, early on in this process, and I think it's going to pay dividends come Brazil next year. Because let's be honest, if you asked me a year ago, Matt Beasler, Omar Gonzalez would be your two starting center backs, and Alejandro Bedoya may start at right midfield. I would split your head in the cookie.
Those young players, it really adds a fascinating element to this team, because now you've got guys like Aaron Johansson, let's say, who wasn't even in the picture when this qualifying cycle started, and now you're looking at him maybe playing a key role in Brazil. So who are one of those two guys that can maybe be an impact sub off the bench or possibly even start next summer in Brazil?
I think we have a long time on that. I think, obviously, you know, how quickly can Clint Dempsey get his feet wet in Seattle will play a huge factor in the starting 11. I'm very reluctant on October 17, 2013, to tell you what the starting 11 is, because honestly, I don't think, and Alexi Lalas disagrees with this, but I don't think Jurgen's that naive to put that starting 11 down. What happens if there's an injury? What happens if this guy is suspended for happened. You have no idea. You have a plan, but it never goes that way. And I just feel like that Jurgen is the kind of coach where he may ride a hot hand, where you and I are looking at each other before opening that at the World Cup saying, wait, what? This guy's playing? So, I think Graham Zuzzi is a big 4 or 5 months for him. I think it's huge because I think he's really had some competition out with Landon Donovan back in, Alejandro Madueña. I think he's not sold on his two center backs yet. And obviously the right back conundrum of, is it Brad Evans? Is Steve Tarundolo hurt? I think there's a lot of scenarios that will play itself out by February or March and kind of clear up the murky waters that right now there's maybe 4 or 5 players that he knows are in the starting lineup, and that's about it.
Can you spotlight one player who helped themselves the most this summer through the Gold Cup and World Cup qualifying?
Oh, it's a good one. Summer, I would say, and he didn't do the Gold Cup, Jozy Altidore, going on that goal-scoring run, I think convinced Jurgen Klinsmann that he's an elite forward at this level. I think that was huge. And I think Alejandro Bedoya has extremely impressed Jurgen. And you asked me about the Gold Cup. That was the Gold Cup player that I think has impressed Jurgen the most. Mm-hmm. I think he's the one guy, and then his move to France, playing at a high level, I think he's improved his stock the most because when we were in D.C. in May for the German, friendly, we didn't hear Alejandro Bedoya's name mentioned a lot. Now we're hearing it every single time we meet with Jurgen before games.
Let's move global a bit and look at the entire specter of qualifying. Which team that has now missed on the World Cup is the biggest disappointment in your eyes around the world?
Say that again. You mean disappointment in the sense of who's not in, or
who's not in?
He's not officially. The Egypt game. I mean, can you tell me anything that's been more gut-wrenching and disappointing for us American soccer fans for Bob Bradley? I mean, I was shocked to see the scoreline 6-1, and obviously they're not officially eliminated, but down 6-1 at home. It's one of those that I think was the most surprising. I look at, Europe, there's always going to be one or two teams in. I'm glad Bosnia-Herzegovina is in. I am extremely, what they have going, what they've done, that country, for how stricken it's been after the war, for them to qualify, that's the exciting story for me. And then who knows if Iceland makes it. I mean, let's be honest, if Iceland's in a World Cup in Brazil, that's kind of funny in itself, but
imagine the Iceland-USA World Cup match in Brazil, the rivalry that exists there now. That could be a big draw around the world.
Well, once Iceland made the playoff, I think all 23 players and head coaches and president of the Football Association, which basically is everyone that lives in the country of Iceland, sent Aaron Johansson a postcard.
One team that I know I've seen in person and that you've seen when they came here to play in a friendly that greatly impressed was Belgium. Do you see them as maybe the dark horse and the kind of trendy pick next summer when you look at all of the attacking talent they have? Even, Premier League goalkeeper and Mignolet, defenders that are rock solid. I mean, they have all the pieces that it looks like you need to make a deep run in Brazil. Are they maybe looking at favorite status as a trendy dark horse next summer?
Yeah, but there's a little bit of a curse there, Matt, which is interesting. It's because if you look over the last 4 or 5 World Cups, there's always been that trendy dark horse, and it's actually not panned out. I look at Ivory Coast. There are some teams where you look at it and you're like, oh, this is the team. And that's where I think Belgium has to be extremely careful. However, we were having this argument a couple weeks ago on Bristol. Is this the golden generation, or is Belgium really doing something to develop young talent? Because I've never seen a wealth of young attacking talent like Belgium has right now. The fact that Mourinho doesn't even bring on Lukaku. Every time Lukaku scores for Everton, that's going to kill Mourinho at Chelsea. Absolutely. The guy is a phenomenal goal scorer. And he may not even start because Benteke may be a better forward. They have a wealth of attacking talent, and they will be every single pundit and every single fan's dark horse and sexy pick. Now, whether or not Belgium reads those articles or believes those clippings, that'll be a different story.
Let's move to a topic I know that is very important to you, and get off of soccer for a little bit and move to the discussion around concussions. For those that may not be familiar that are listening to the podcast, tell us a bit about Think Taylor and how the concussion issue is very personal for you.
It was August 30th, 2008 was the my last concussion that I got in an MLS game, and it ultimately ended my career at a very young age of 28. And it's a part of my everyday life. I deal with symptoms every single day of post-concussion syndrome. So in order to try to fight it and help, I started a foundation, ThinkTaylor.org, which is basically, we have a care program, and it's concussion awareness, recognition, education. And I just believe too often that when I was playing and everyone says, well, back in the day they had concussion problems, they didn't know. Listen, mine was August 30th, 2008. I wasn't back in the day. I was almost yesterday. So, and I know you can have a slight joke of saying I'm old, but the reality is that really just was 2008. So I figured my family and I looked at it and I felt like the only way to give people a voice, yeah, I have a microphone, yes, I'm an XMLS MVP and all that. And people know my story, but there are thousands and thousands of kids, amateur athletes, that have the exact same thing I have, and they have no one to talk about. They're looking for help. They're not seeing the right doctor. So, you know, I started this foundation, and I think what convinced me was a good friend of mine, Junior Seau, taking his life and seeing how his family dealt with his injury and stuff. I think he convinced me that, you know, the least I can do is start a foundation and start speaking up about it.
Junior Seau's life and story was a big part of the League of Denial Frontline documentary on PBS. What was your reaction to seeing that?
It wasn't my first time, and it wasn't. There was nothing in that video that I don't know, that I didn't know or haven't heard. However, you're texting me. Many people texted me during that, and I think that was the biggest thing I took away from it, is the educational piece of that was huge, because I still don't believe the majority of our society and the majority of our athletes and families and parents really know the dangers of it. I really don't, Matt. And I know we're in 2013, but I just don't see it. I just don't see it, and I think that was the best thing. I mean, you and I were talking about, how about Twitter?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, League of Denial was all over it. And so I think that was pretty cool on the education part, but it's scary, Matt. It's a scary topic, because I tell everyone that the one injury that changes your life is your brain. And it's funny to me, not funny, it's a wrong term, it's ironic to me, because the biggest talk right now in the NFL is what, Matt? Oh my gosh, we're having these knee injuries. We're having all these tackles on the knees. Yeah, they need to fix that. But you can have your knees surgically repaired. You get hit in your brain, and your brain's concussed, and you get hit that second time. I mean, death is a part of it. Second impact syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we've totally wrapped our brains, no pun intended, around the injury of concussions. There's no pill. There's no surgery. If you screw it up, you're really behind the eight ball.
The NFL has been such a focus in this concussion. I guess you could say it's a continuing education and raising awareness. What the league knew, when do they know it? That's been a big part of it. The lawsuit settlement has been a big part of it. But the NFL has taken the brunt of the attention on this issue. How do other sports now respond? How does Major League Soccer respond to this rising awareness and education and attention on concussions? How does baseball or the NBA or all of these other sports come together as a sporting culture? How do we continue to take positive steps forward as this story continues to evolve?
It's a great question. It's honestly a really great question, because it doesn't just stop. It doesn't stop because, oh, okay, now we saw League of Denial, we're okay. MLS has been ahead of the game a little bit, in part because of my outspokenness of what happened on how my injury was handled. We now have a concussion committee. We now review head injuries. You know, certain things like that have improved. The NHL, Brendan Shanahan, done a wonderful job of trying to make some real real cultural changes in there. I think they have some equipment issues that need to be changed, and I think Brendan Shanahan and the NHL are doing a wonderful job. The NBA just announced, you know, a concussion committee last year. That was a process, as I've heard. It took numerous doctors to really give up their right and understand that it's better to have an independent doctor. So, it's always changing, and I still think it is. But the general public thinks it's an NFL problem. The number one sport for women in concussions is soccer. Number two, cheerleading. How many of us in the general public think cheerleading is a sport? So you have to become educated. This isn't an injury that just happens to NFL players and NHL players. This is an injury that you and I could be sitting here talking on the phone. You fall out of your chair. You kind of don't hit your head, but you get whiplash. You can get a concussion. Every single person can get a concussion. It's what they do when they get one. And that's the biggest thing that we need to change in this country, because still too many people say, ah, it's just a headache. Have some orange juice and juice Tylenol. It doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. It's scary. And I think, hopefully, maybe, I don't know if this is your hope over the next 10, 15 years, but maybe we're in that place where all of these sports, you know, whether it be the NFL to women's soccer to what have you, have this education in place. But Taylor, don't you think there's a part of it that goes with it, that it's something that you can't fully prevent from happening as well?
Amen. And I give credit to you, because I didn't tell you to say that on this podcast. So that's a very astute observation. And it's the one thing, it's not the same injury by use comparison. We thought ACL injuries about 30 years ago was going to end careers. Now Adrian Peterson could be MVP of the NFL after, what, 4 months? Mm-hmm. 6 months. So the injury isn't going to go anywhere. And to be quite honest, if the concussion numbers go up, we actually did the right thing. You know why? We diagnosed concussion. It's when we don't diagnose concussions and they don't and they go hidden and then the second one happens, then you're in trouble. So everyone thinks this is, oh my God, he's got a concussion. Look at the numbers in the NHL, the NFL, Major League Soccer. That's actually a positive thing, because we're actually diagnosing and recognizing what concussions are. The two biggest things in pro sports with regards to traumatic brain injuries that has to change is recognition and rehabilitation. And those are the two things that a lot of people, a lot of leagues are working on. So if the recognition, i.e. the number of concussions, go up, well, guess what? The rehabilitation is going to eventually improve, because we are going to know a little bit more about the injury and know how it is. What it takes to really rehabilitate the injury.
Mm-hmm. Finally, before you get to the rest of your laundry, let's talk some MLS and your network, which is involved in the negotiations for a new MLS TV contract. I won't ask you about ESPN specifically, but I will ask you, for the league as a whole moving forward, how important are these negotiations to the future of MLS?
I think we're still in the growing pains, quote-unquote, of this league. I think you and I had a great discussion in Columbus before U.S. Mexico, and we were just sitting there, and I think the listeners should hear that conversation. Our league right now and our fans need to realize there's so many complaints when you go on Twitter and Facebook about salary caps and why don't we have this player, why can't we buy this player, why single entity? You know why? Because the TV ratings aren't up. If you call yourself a U.S. soccer fan, how can you not be an MLS fan? And so when I say that, in U.S. plays Mexico, the rating is 1.9, almost a 2, then explain to me how an MLS game of the week can't get a 0.7, 0.8, or a 1. I don't get that. And everyone that says, well, the U.S., you know, every single player that played in U.S., I shouldn't say every single player, but there was over 80% of them at some point played in MLS. So that has to change. And I think, Matt, these negotiations, because of the success in those rating numbers of the U.S. men's national team, I think ESPN will be involved in these negotiations as they are. I'm assuming Fox will be for sure, because they have the next two World Cups, NBC Sports, and who knows if there's a fourth player here. But the league's growing. The one thing that hasn't grown with the rest of the league, i.e. stadiums, leagues, teams, everything off the field, is the TV ratings. And I think fans need to look themselves in the mirror, because they control it. if you want to go to me on Twitter, Matt, and say, Dylan, I can't believe you agree with single entity and salary caps and all that, and I'll look at you and say, well, did you watch Seattle-Portland Sunday night on ESPN? Oh, no, I couldn't. I was rearranging my sock drawer. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They got to watch the game.
So how do you do that, though?
Do you think I'm off on that or no?
Well, I think the TV dynamic in MLS, it's almost like the white whale for the league because there's all this growth, all this positivity, attendance up. You look at what's happening in the Northwest, expansion teams galore all over the country. What's happening with the New York City FC club? All of these good things, more designated players, more recognizable names. Even you have U.S. internationals like Clint Dempsey coming back. And that was one of the big complaints that I had about the league is, you know, you have all these guys, they get good enough to make the national squad, then they go overseas to play. Well, Dempsey's back now. The only unconquered frontier is television ratings. And aside from going door-to-door to MLS season ticket holders and saying you have to watch this game to drive up the product, I don't know how this league convinces people en masse that watch the Premier League, that watch U.S. men's national teams games, to tune in every week for MLS when they haven't done so going back several years now. I don't know how the league does this.
Right. No, it is the white whale, but here's my dilemma. If you're an English national team fan, do you watch the BPL? Yes. So where's the 1.9 TV rating for U.S. Mexico? Where is half of that for the MLS game of the week?
Mm-hmm.
That's my question, and I don't understand that, and I've never understood that. I call myself an NFL fan, an NBA fan, Major League Baseball fan. The biggest dilemma is exactly what you just said. If you call yourself a soccer fan, you can watch 6-7 legit leagues. But my question is, the ratings are 0.3s in MLS for a game of the week, while the U.S. game is a 1.9. I'm struggling to wrap my head around that. Now, in saying that, I do think MLS, ESPN, Fox, NBC, whoever MLS does games with, the times of the games have to be better. There has to be a scheduled time. And ironically, everyone says, well, Saturday night works in MLS. I don't know if I agree with that. I personally believe a Thursday night game works when every other MLS team is not playing.
Mm-hmm.
But then those fans can watch the game. Say, but we're having this discussion is a positive thing, that in my eyes, because that means everything else is exponentially growing except this. So we figure this out, and I can guarantee you, you know this better than anyone, that board of directors in MLS and every owner is asking themselves, and this is the discussion every single time, everything else is growing and doing exactly what we want. How do we fix TV? Where do we go with it?
Mm-hmm. And I think you hit the nail on the head with part of it is that when you have MLS games on Saturday night, you know, you're going up against college football in the fall. But more to the point, I think, with soccer fans, you've already watched maybe one or two English Premier League games.
Yep.
And let's face it, you know, on television, if you're going to sit down and watch Chelsea and Manchester United, or you have the choice to watch Seattle-Portland, you're probably going to watch the better game with the better players in the better league. And I think getting away from that and saying, okay, maybe we're not in a position to compete with the Premier League on Saturday as a television product. Let's go to Wednesday night. Let's go to Thursday night and carve out a dedicated time each week where fans of the league can find us and start to grow that product and say, you know, we're not going to get a 1.9 rating next year to solve this thing, that it's going to have to be something that the league has to take a look at growing over time. And maybe the growth doesn't match what they're doing in the stadiums and with the expansion teams, but they have to, I think, Taylor, for these networks to see a deal and to get the money in the league that can really get it jump-starting. They have to see that growth over the life of this next contract.
Growth has kind of shown itself in the sport of soccer because of the U.S. rating. And I think the ratings this year have actually convinced the executives of ESPN and Fox and NBC saying, okay, it's there. You know, where in the past, I don't know, Matt, you can tell me if I'm wrong because you've seen the TV world more than me. I've only been in it for 2 or 3 years, but I feel like this year there's been more of that, okay, now there's actually, we see the light at the end of the tunnel. We can pull off a 2.0 for a soccer game in this country. And it being U.S. soccer, not Manchester City versus Manchester United.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, listen, if this league wants to go where their goals are of being a top 10 league in the world and having great players come and having a salary cap that's double or triple, well, guess what? The only way to do that is to get the TV ratings up. It's a great discussion.
Yeah, you're right. All right, I'll get you out of here. Placate my local interest here for the last question. A, does the Columbus Crew get the last spot in the Eastern Conference under a miraculous set of unpredictable circumstances? And who is the coach of my local MLS team next year?
If Columbus Crew are in the playoffs, Brian Bliss is your head coach next season. No doubt about it. But new ownership has come in. And you always have to raise the question of, you know, they want to make a splash. Is it a, i.e., Brad Friedel? Is it a Pat Ramos? But Brian Bliss deserves a ton of credit for what he's done. And the fact that they're in a home and away series versus the New England Revolution is amazing. The fact that they're still in the playoff race is amazing to me. So I think they make the playoffs. No, I don't. And that's because not of what Columbus doesn't do, it's what the other teams do. Chicago has the luxury of playing Toronto. Sporting KC plays Philly. Philly plays Montreal. They're all playing each other. And I think Columbus, they're going to get one result against the New England Revolution. It's what the other teams do that I think ultimately leaves Columbus out of the playoffs.
You don't want
to. Is this the part where you stop recording the podcast?
No, I'm still recording. I want to ask you if you're going to throw your hat into the ring, you know, get out of the TV business, or are you now fully converted as a TV personality?
Are you telling me I should get out of the TV business, man? Is that what I should do?
This is the Awful Announcing Podcast, after all, Taylor. No, I'm thinking, you know what?
I guess this may be the top three best podcasts for Awful Announcing. I don't know, man. I take it one day at a time. The concussion thing, in all seriousness, has told me who knows what tomorrow brings. I've always had a little part of me that's very interested in being in that kind of role, whether it's a technical director working with the head coach, or maybe it's a head coach. But right now, I really enjoyed this TV thing. I would have never thought I would have done it, and I hope it continues for a long time. But who knows?
We'll see. I'll save a place for you in Columbus just in case, though.
How about that?
All right.
I'll stay in your basement when I'm traveling.
All right. Thanks, Taylor Twellman, for joining us. Go back. Finish up your folding duties. Follow him on Twitter. Bug him about his underwear and all things soccer at Taylor Twellman. Taylor, thanks. Enjoyed it greatly. We'll catch up again soon.
Thanks, Matt. Love the website. Love the Twitter feed. Keep it up on that.
All right. Thanks to Taylor Twellman for coming on today. One of our favorites. Great guy to talk to. And glad we could finally get him on the podcast. So hopefully you enjoyed. And go bug him on Twitter at Taylor Twellman. And you can bug us as well. Follow us at Awful Announcing. Follow me at MYoder84. Like us on Facebook. Sign up for the newsletter. All of that good stuff. And bookmark us at awfulannouncing.com. Hope you enjoy the weekend. Till next time, this is Matt Yoder saying, most of all, thanks to you once again for listening. Happy trails from the Awful Announcing Podcast.